Hi, this is Dr. Mike Chupp, and welcome back to the weekly podcast of the Christian Medical and Dental Associations, which we call CMDA Matters. Today, we will be listening in on part two of a recent conversation that Dr. Jeff Barrows and I had with Dr. David Prentice of the Charlotte Lozier Institute, and he'll be talking about the subject of stem cell research and clinical applications of that research. But first, I wanted to thank Dr. Jeff Barrows because he hosted the podcast last week as my wife Pam and I, we finally got away to the Smoky Mountains in Western North Carolina to celebrate our 30th wedding anniversary and 40 years since we had our first summer of love as I prepared to head off to college and pre-medical education. Well, while I was on vacation, I did have the opportunity to participate in our August 21st webinar hosted by Dr. Bill Griffin, Vice President of Dental Ministry, with two of our member leaders, Dr. Far Curlin and Dr. Kathy Scarborough. They kickstarted our new video training series, which is in our Learning Center, on how to integrate faith into healthcare practice. We're calling it Faith Prescriptions. This is absolutely free if you're our member, so if you'd like to find out more, just go to cmda.org/faith. As I mentioned, Dr. David Prentice is back today, and in case you missed the introduction last week, he is Vice President and Research Director for the Charlotte Lozier Institute. He is also Adjunct Professor of Molecular Genetics at the John Paul II Institute, the Catholic University of America, and was a founding advisory board member for the Midwest Stem Cell Therapy Center. Dr. Prentice has over 40 years' experience as a scientific researcher and professor. He established Stem Cell Research Facts, which is an educational website providing scientific facts and patient-centered videos about adult stem cells, and is a founding member of Do No Harm, the Coalition of Americans for Research Ethics. And he's also an advisory board member for the Center for Bioethics and Human Dignity at Trinity Evangelical University in Chicago. He has provided scientific advice for numerous medical professionals, legislators, policymakers, and organizations at the state, federal, and even the international level. I welcome you now to listen in on our recent conversation. Well, welcome back, Dr. David Prentice, who's Vice President and Research Director for the Charlotte Lozier Institute. Dr. Prentice is a frequent contributor to our Point blog that comes out every week with all kinds of perspectives on issues in the news today, especially as it relates to healthcare and public policy. And Dr. Prentice, those of you who listened last week, has been working for 20 or 30 years on stem cell research and even served for a couple of years a very special ethics committee that was formed within Health and Human Services to give advice and feedback on proposed funding for research projects involving embryo research. So this week, welcome back, Dr. Prentice, and I think we're going to start you off. Dr. Barrows has a question for you.
Hello again, Dr. Prentice. Good to be with you again. And I guess my question, when I listened to your answers in our previous episode about the difference in science between embryonic stem cell research and adult stem cell research, I mean, it's a stark difference in terms of the success that we're seeing with adult stem cell research. So I would like to ask you about what the current status of our federal funding for embryo research is, and how does that relate to an amendment that I'm sure many of our listeners are not familiar with, but it's called the Dickey-Wicker Amendment. Could you elaborate on that a little bit for us?
Glad to do so, and glad to be back with you. Thanks so much. The federal government, our taxpayer money, continues to be spent on various types of embryo or embryonic stem cell research, as well as fetal tissue research using organs and tissues from elective abortion. The embryonic stem cell research in particular has to meet certain regulations, one of them being what you've mentioned here in terms of this Dickey-Wicker Amendment. And that amendment was put in place because a a previous advisory committee formed back actually in 1994 called the Human Embryo Research Panel, formed at NIH, was supposed to look at, you know, the ethical questions about should we even be doing research on human embryos and what types of research might be licit, what types would be illicit. It turns out there were no pro-lifers on that panel. And they started with the chairman saying, you know, if you're on here and, you know, you are a pro-lifer, then you were impaneled by mistake. You should just leave. Because what we're here to do is to talk about the kinds of research we want to do with human embryos. Well, that was 1994. Congress was hoping to get a more honest report. Instead, what they did was recommend all sorts of horrific experiments with human embryos, including specially creating human embryos just for research experiments. President Clinton even turned away all of their recommendations. But Congress's response was to put in place this Dickey Wicker Amendment. It comes from the name of the two House members at that time who put it forward, Congressman J. Dickey and Congressman Roger Wicker.
What year was that, Dr. Prentice?
It was passed in Congress in 1995 and then got rolled into one of these omnibus pieces of legislation signed into law in January of 1996.
Okay.
As an amendment, or what's called a rider, it has to be renewed every year by Congress and signed into law by the president. And it has been. Every year since 1996, Democratic Congress, Republican Congress, Democratic president, Republican president, every single year it's been renewed. And it's a very simple little amendment. All it says is you can't use federal taxpayer money to create human embryos for research or to destroy or even risk the harm of human embryos in research. Well, what that does then is it puts a barrier in place for a lot of scientists who want to do embryo research because they're after the large federal grants. That's where the money is. And this came to the fore, especially in terms of human embryonic stem cell research. Dr. Jamie Thompson in 1998 was the first to successfully keep human embryonic stem cells growing in the lab, but remember, you have to destroy a young human embryo to get those cells. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And so then there were a number of hearings and proposals that, well, let's just get rid of the Dickey Wicker Amendment, or let's allow funding of these experiments. And in fact, then in 2000, the Clinton NIH came up with a proposal and asked for grant proposals, solicited grant proposals that would do experiments with human embryos, derive the embryonic stem cells, and this would all be done with taxpayer money. Mm-hmm. My friends at CMDA and I, as well as some other folks, actually sued the federal government.
That was around year 2000, I think, wasn't it?
Yeah, well, in the spring of 2001, because they had put out those grant proposals in the fall of 2000. There'd been another little event that had happened around that same time of an election. And there was a new president and a new Congress. And NIH was still moving forward, though, and they were planning in April of 2001 to review those grant proposals and start awarding money for human embryonic stem cell research. So we sued the federal government in March of 2001 and essentially got a moratorium on funding of that research. And it was all focused on the fact that, wait a minute, the Dickey Wicker Amendment says you can't use federal funds for research in which a human embryo is destroyed or even harmed. We did stop things for a brief period of time. The sort of compromise that came forward, and in fact, President Bush's first address to the nation was on embryonic stem cell research and about this lawsuit. And the compromise was that if a scientist used private funds to destroy the embryo, then they could take that dish of cells and bring to the NIH and get some federal funding, some federal taxpayer funding at that point.
You mentioned also, I think last week that, or even earlier in this program, that the Dickey Wicker Amendment has to do also with prohibiting the formation of embryos for research. And so my understanding from your blog is that a number of scientists are make embryoids, if you will. So does that apply? And is there a space for litigation now with what some scientists are doing from our perspective unethically?
It does apply to that, as well as a number of these other things that I think we mentioned last year, the idea of human-animal chimeras that raise ethical concerns. The stem cell-derived embryos or embryoids, which they still tend to use, is going to be a sort of a direct challenge to Dickey Wicker. Other ways to make embryos. Dickey Wicker says you can't use federal taxpayer funds to create this embryo for research. Gene-edited embryos or three-parent embryos and so on. And so it's still a barrier. And the question will be then, as scientists want to do some of these experiments, are they making a human embryo?
Stem cell research is tricky. I mean, if there's anybody who understands that in the U.S. today, it is Dr. David Prentice. There is a body, you wrote about it last month, an International Society for Stem Cell Research, or ISSCR for short. And they had, for a number of years, I guess, guidelines having to do with research only up into 14 days of an embryo life. And what you wrote last month is that they were going to be considering a change. And you said probably a change is coming, and that's going to have significant repercussions. So since that article, the society has changed the guidelines. Can you talk about that now a little bit?
Right. And let's talk about that 14-day limit and where it originally came from. Again, back in what now seems like ancient history, the 1970s and 80s and 90s, there were groups meeting and considering the ethics of doing any research with human embryos or working with embryos in the laboratory. And in 1979, there was a U.S. panel that said, well, we probably shouldn't do that or shouldn't grow them for a long period of time. Maybe 14 days would be a good limit to do that. The Warnock Commission in the U.K. in the 1980s came up with the same sort of idea. And it was really there that the genesis of this, quote, 14-day limit came. And simply what it said was, you should not be experimenting with or growing human embryos in the laboratory for longer than 14 days. Now, personally, we believe in a zero-day limit, that you shouldn't be experimenting with human embryos at all in the laboratory. But you know, the other part of this, in terms of the 14-day limit, the justification was supposedly 14 days is around when certain other changes start to take place in embryonic development, organogenesis begins, and so on, and twinning becomes more limited. In point of fact, 14 days was an arbitrary number set because it was a number that they couldn't even approach. The best anybody could do up until the last couple of years was grow an embryo for about 9 or 10 days. Well, that's an easy marker then to meet, and it makes it seem like you're meeting some sort of ethical guideline. The ISSCR, the International Society for Stem Cell Research, didn't actually come into being until about 2002, and they're a self-appointed group that put out these guidelines that they hope other scientists will then follow. And it's pretty much a matter of trying to make it look like we're meeting some sort of ethical rules, when all we're really trying to do is anesthetize the public to the fact that certain types of embryo research are going on. And what they did just a week or so ago was say, no, we're getting rid of the 14-day limit. They didn't put a new limit on, though. There's no limit now.
Not even 40-day limit now.
No, there's not a 40-day limit. There's not a 28-day limit. There's not a 180-day limit. There's no limit. They removed any sort of limit. Now, they do make some nice sounding phrases that you need to consult an ethical advisory board, or you need to solicit, you know, the opinions of the public. But they also say that basically the scientific organization should drive this vehicle and, you know, essentially tell the public what you want to do and make it sound really good. And their limit is you should be able to do whatever you want as long as it is scientifically justified. And it's not just the 14-day limit in growing embryos in the laboratory, which, by the way, there's an Israeli scientist who grew mouse embryos in the lab up to about halfway through mouse gestation. You've got beating hearts and limbs and all sorts of things going on by that point. And flat out said, I want to do this with human embryos. And I'm looking forward to the ISSCR's new recommendations, because I want to grow a human embryo up to at least 40 days. And then, of course, we'll just discard it when we're done.
Well, Dr. Prentice, another recommendation of the ISSCR was to allow research that will result in the creation of human chimeras. Now, on our last episode, you talked a little bit about human chimeras, and I was wondering if you could revisit that a little bit and talk about briefly the ethical implications of creating a chimera, and why is there this sudden research? We're hearing more and more about it. What are the harmful complications and consequences of such research?
Well, again, a chimera is simply an organism that has the DNA from two different individuals, two different species is usually what we're looking at. So a human mouse or a human monkey chimera that is incorporated DNA and in fact incorporated cells from two different species. The interest most recently seems to be because they want to push the envelope in terms of looking at how tissues form and interact and get as close to human as possible without calling it a human or validating that this is a human. And the justification most recently has been, well, we've got an organ transplant shortage, so let's grow human organs in animals, such as pigs or sheep. They'd be about the right size for their body. The organ would be about the right size. And their solution is to add human cells to a very early animal embryo. The idea being that the human cells will sort of fill in and make a human heart or liver or kidney within this developing organism. And then later on, you can simply harvest those human organs. But the problem is adding the cells so early in development means that they can form virtually any organ,
including brain elements, I would suppose.
That's one of the big ethical concerns, whether you would have a monkey with a human brain or a mouse even with a human brain. And certain experiments have already shown it does change their cognition. Or what about a sheep or a pig that is growing human sperm or human eggs within their body? Or a sheep that has a human face or a monkey that has a human hands. These are the ones of ethical concern that blur and cross species boundaries. And the ISSCR, as you mentioned, already has said, yep, you should be able to go ahead and do whatever you want. They even have said you should be able to gestate these human animal chimeras as long as it's done in a non-human womb.
Well, Dr. Prentice, last week and this, I know we've shared a lot of things that I'm sure our listeners will find quite alarming, especially what you've mentioned now, that those guidelines are going to be looked at by scientists from all around the world, including places like China, where there don't seem to be too many fences that limit research. So it's been a little bit alarming and maybe somewhat depressing to hear some of these things. But how should Christian healthcare professionals speak up and make a difference against these new research guidelines? Is there something that each one of us, whether a practicing community physician or whether those in academics, university setting, what can we do?
I think one key area to focus on would be to contact your elected representatives at the federal as well as the state level. The federal level, again, a lot of these scientists are going for the large federal grants, for example, from NIH and other agencies of the federal government. Congress can actually weigh in on this, and they have in the past. We've seen, for example, the Dickey Wicker Amendment, which does form a good barrier. There are other ways that Congress can speak up and stop some of this, or at least try to intervene and steer research in a good and ethical direction. And I think also it would be helpful to educate your peers, be helpful to educate the public. Don't be afraid to call into that radio show and bring up this topic and say, you know, you need to be aware that there are proposals to do these sorts of things. Write an op-ed or a letter to the editor and so on, and just talk to your peers about, did you even know this is going on? And we've got resources on the CMDA website. We've got resources on the Charlotte Lozier Institute website that can educate you and then help focus you in terms of being able to weigh in, because we really do need to be speaking up for ethical science and ethical medicine.
Well, Jeff Barrows, Dr. Prentice is mentioning some things that I think are making your heart race, talking about some CMDA resources. And talk to us a little bit about that, and what other ways can you add to what Dr. Prentice has shared that our listeners can get involved?
Well, I first of all, Mike, want to echo what Dr. Prentice has said, and that is make contact with both your state and federal elected officials and make them aware of your concern about these areas of research that we've been talking about. I would say that we're clearly going to be watching this, especially at the federal level. I think we're at a little bit of a disadvantage in that you've already alluded to the fact that a lot of this is happening behind the scenes. It's not going to be out in the open because the administration knows how many people are opposed to this type of research. But I can say that we will be watching closely, and any time that we have any inclination that there is going to be a change in HHS policy regarding, or NIH policy regarding, funding of this type of research, we will make our listeners aware of that. I would just ask that the listeners and our membership just be willing to get engaged at that moment. Sometimes we have very little warning in terms of something that's going to be happening. So we'll be sending out an email to all of our members if, in fact, we see something that's worthy of their time to get engaged on this issue.
Jeff, a question for you or Dr. Prentice. This is all federal. Are there issues going on at state level involving stem cell research at all?
I can start briefly in saying I haven't seen anything in terms of research in any of the states, with the exception of California. California, back in 2001, when President Bush came out with his opposition to ongoing destruction of embryos, they decided to set up their own fund. And my understanding is they recently passed a large amount of money to reimburse that fund for ongoing embryonic stem cell research. That's the only state I'm aware of that is actively engaged in this.
Dr. Prentice?
At $5 billion state taxpayer dollars for California, they've gone the wrong direction. There are a few other states that have weighed in small ways, not to the same extent. One interesting difference in the past, New York State had been putting a lot of money towards embryonic stem cell research. They recently canceled that fund, probably because the embryonic stem cells were not working out so well. even small funds, Kansas, for example, we have an ongoing fund for the Midwest Stem Cell Therapy Center, which is focused solely on adult stem cell research, not embryonic, not fetal. And there are a number of other states, but it's not been a very active area in terms of state funding lately. But you know, there are states that are looking at this, and in terms of chimeras and so on, maybe if the federal government's not going to act, some states are considering maybe they'll do something within their own borders.
Well, I want to thank you again, Dr. Prentice, for joining us this week. Pastor Emeritus that I've listened to in the past and was really impacted by an article that he wrote. This is Reverend John Piper, Pastor Emeritus from Bethlehem Baptist and his Desiring God Ministries. A couple of years ago when New York State had their very radical pro-abortion bill passed, Reverend Piper wrote an article, and the top of it was a scripture that I committed to memory some time back, and I've reminded our listeners from time to time. It's from Proverbs 24, verses 10 to 12, and it starts off and says, "If you faint in the day of adversity, your strength is small." And then it goes on and says, "Rescue those who are being taken away to death." And we could say, rescue those human embryos, those unborn who are being taken away to death. Hold back those human embryos who are stumbling to slaughter. If you say, "Behold, we did not know this," doesn't he who watches over your heart perceive it? Doesn't he who keeps watch over your soul know it? And will he not repay man according to his work? Incredible challenge to my own heart. It's my own motivation to remain engaged because we can't say we don't know it, especially now after 2 weeks of hearing about this area. So thank you, Dr. Prentice, for all that you're doing with Charlotte Lozier. Tara Sander Lee, please pass her our greetings. She was a past guest with us. We appreciated visiting with her as well.
Thank you.
Well, why should Christians get involved in issues of bioethics, even to the point of being very active in advocacy work? Well, I hope you appreciated that scripture from Proverbs and King Solomon. Is unethical scientific research really a bad thing if it results in life-saving breakthroughs? Why the Church Needs Bioethics, a Guide to Wise Engagement with Life's Challenges by Dr. John F. Kilner. He discusses three rich and true-to-life cases which illustrate the urgency of such bioethical issues as reproductive and genetic technologies, stem cell research, and human enhancement technologies, which will help you understand and constructively engage bioethical challenges with the resources of Christian wisdom and ministry. You can pick up your copy of this book today at cmda.org/store or just by calling 888-230-2637 today. This is your last week to snag a copy of our August Book of the Month by Dr. Fuzz Rana, Humans 2.0. CMDA, we are very grateful for the support of our members and CMDA Matters listeners like you, and we want to extend a small thanks to you for any donation you might make. If you'd like to give, use the link cmda.org/bookofthemonth, one word, to receive your copy of Humans 2.0. Thank you for supporting this ministry. I want to let you know that CMDA has a special opportunity for our dental student members this fall. We will be hosting 4 Emerging Leaders in Dentistry conferences. All will be live and in person at various sites across the nation. The first will be in Texas, halfway between Dallas and Houston, on September the 10th and 11th. The second will be in Lexington, Kentucky on September 17th and 18th. The third will be in Southern California on October 9th. And the fourth and final conference will be in Augusta, Georgia on October 29th and 30th. The speakers at each of these sites will challenge and inspire you to live out your faith in your future careers as dentists. And you'll have a great opportunity to meet future colleagues from other schools. Registration is open now for all four of these conferences, so please sign up, or you can get more information at cmda.org/events. If you're a woman professional in healthcare, or you know someone who is, there is still time to make arrangements to attend the Women Physicians and Dentists in Christ Conference for 2021, being held September 30th through October 3rd in Grand Rapids, Michigan. We would love to see you there. Last year, the pandemic forced our commission for WPDC to go virtual with the conference. And yet there was the blessing of seeing so many members serving in other countries or in situations unable to travel to be a part of that conference. So our Women Physicians and Dentists in Christ would like to extend that opportunity to you as well. We look forward to meeting you either in person or online. And the conference is offering 16 hours of live and enduring CE credits for the very first time. For more information and to register, just visit cmda.org/events or click the link in our show notes today. Did you know that CMDA's Center for Wellbeing has a team of certified coaches ready to help you navigate your life and career and a popular coaching training program? I'd like to invite you to explore how coaching can help you optimize your life by connecting with one of our coaches. If you've been seeking to learn the powerful skills of coaching, then just register for CMDA's upcoming 501 Foundations in Christian Coaching course. That's for 6 weeks, one evening a week, starting October 12th through November 16th from 8 to 10 p.m. Eastern Time. The course is approved for up to 12 CME credits and is open to all healthcare professionals, as well as their spouses, students, and residents. You can register to find out more information at cmda.org/coaching or just by emailing us at coaching@cmda.org. This week, I've asked our state public policy director, Nicole Hayes, to bring us a brief public policy update. Nicole, welcome to CMDA Matters.
Thanks, Mike, for this opportunity. Concerning care for patients with chronic and terminal illnesses, there are some within our culture who would promote a quick physician-assisted death rather than helping patients and their loved ones grapple in a life-honoring pursuit of palliation by caring professionals. Patients should have access to palliative care and hospice care without being ushered toward physician-assisted suicide. During a very active 2021 legislative session, our American Academy of Medical Ethics state directors, our CMDA members, and along with our state and national public policy partners, defeated the legalization and expansion of several assisted suicide bills. We are grateful for those victories. However, they're temporary. For 2022, we anticipate that these bills that we defeated will be reintroduced in states such as Delaware, Hawaii, Maryland, Virginia, and Washington State. Please pray for our efforts and that such bills will die for good. This death culture creates a system of unethical medicine that advocates for the expedient rather than for what is right. As Christian healthcare professionals and those of us who support life at all stages, we must speak on the value and intrinsic worth of human life. The right to life, as all created in the image of God, is absolute and eternal. If you desire to engage in public policy in your state or at the federal level, please email us at communications@cmda.org.
You know, respecting God as our creator and humankind as created in the Imago Dei, starting with conception and then each of us as an embryo, as well as our fetal development until birth, being knit together in our mother's womb, as King David, the psalmist, tells us, is at the heart of our worldview as Christians in healthcare and why we must hold unswervingly to the sanctity of human life. Repeatedly, I'm reminded that this view matters to our members and to the over 2,000 volunteer servant leaders of CMDA. And it's a vital part of why CMDA matters. Stick with us, please, as we continue to explore and understand how 21st century research and technology might be used in an ethical and biblically sound manner for human flourishing and ultimately to the glory of our Creator. Tune in next Thursday and you will hear from Dr. James Tour of Rice University on the mysteries of the origin of life from a world-renowned and published Christian scientist's perspective who believes wholeheartedly in the critical need to understand and believe in the resurrection of Jesus Christ. We will see you then, God willing.
This podcast has been a production of the Christian Medical and Dental Associations. The opinions expressed by guests on this podcast are not necessarily endorsed by the Christian Medical and Dental Associations. CMDA is a nonpartisan organization that does not endorse political parties or candidates for public office. The views expressed on this podcast reflect judgments regarding principles and values held by CMDA and its members and are not intended to imply endorsement of any political party or candidate.